What does it mean when you can't cry? Not because you're stoic or strong, but because somewhere deep in your body, the message was carved, "Stop before I give you something to cry about." This was the reality at age 27, a grown adult who'd forgotten how to let tears fall. The body had learned its lessons so well that even alone, even safe, the waterworks would shut down before a single drop could escape. So began an unusual experiment, a crying date. Hot tub, headphones, sad songs, and a repeated mantra, "I'm safe enough to feel what needs to come." 20 minutes in, as Sade crooned "King of Sorrow," something shifted. The familiar tightening came, that impulse to swallow it all down, but this time there was a conscious choice to relax the face, soften the chest, breathe. What followed wasn't pretty or Instagram-worthy. It was convulsive, shoulder-shaking, belly-deep sobbing. Years of suppressed hurt rushing through like a dam finally breaking. This moment reveals something revolutionary. Healing doesn't happen in our heads. It happens in the tissues that remember, the muscles that hold, the tears that were never allowed to fall. Harriet Tubman never lost a single passenger on the Underground Railroad. Despite bounties, tracking dogs, and armed patrols, she guided every person to freedom through coded spirituals and visions that transcended present circumstances. We're told we're out of futures. The doomsday clock ticks toward midnight, climate catastrophe looms, democracy feels fragile. But the problem isn't the absence of futures, it's the poverty of our imagination. When Ferguson's uprising connected with Native Hawaiians protecting Mauna Kea in 2015, two movements separated by an ocean reshaped time itself through vision and commitment. Wanting attaches to objects, trendy jeans, promotions, perfect relationships. Longing emerges from somewhere deeper. After weeks of therapy, the real answer surfaced. I want to know how to love. Trauma steals our capacity for longing, trapping us in what therapists call a foreshortened sense of future. Our truest visions rarely involve isolation or wealth. They're about connection, impact, becoming. The visions we inherit can only recreate the world as it is. We need visions that make our stomachs quiver, that bring us alive. Commitment bridges vision and reality, staying the course through fear, backlash, and despair. Freedom exists in the gaps between things, called down through dreams that show us paths around our current reality. We've spent centuries trying to outsmart our bodies. The scientific revolution taught us to dominate nature, while Descartes split mind from body, elevating thinking above emotion. This paradigm treats us like machines, endlessly productive, infinitely controllable, conveniently numb. But everything happens in our bodies, every thought, every connection, every moment of joy or terror. Our minds aren't brain functions floating above the fray. They're embodied processes, regulating energy and information within and between us. During a first somatics training in 2010, a startling discovery emerged. There was no feeling in the skin. In somatics, muscle tightness represents contractions, protective impulses that remain in tissues long after danger passes. Over time, these contractions become anesthetized, carrying decades-old tension without registering pain. Unprocessed trauma creates a protective body that becomes our default stress response. This protective self emerges during disagreements, making us lash out with fear-sharpened words. It appears when receiving love, causing retreat because we feel undeserving. This reactivity is time travel, jolting us from the present into past experiences. Here's what's revolutionary. Feeling isn't logical or linear. When wrapped tightly in a blanket during a session, chest muscles finally released. Emotions embedded in those tissues rushed forward like a flood. As contractions loosened, tolerance for intimacy deepened immediately, not through talking, but through allowing the body to finally let go. Feeling requires resources, relationships, trees, community. Sometimes emotions are too immense to process alone, requiring collective holding space. This is why we gather in protests, to share grief too big to feel individually. As Audre Lorde wrote, The white fathers told us, I think, therefore I am. The black mother within each of us whispers in our dreams, I feel, therefore I can be free. Boundaries are the distance at which I can love you and me simultaneously. This reframe transforms boundaries from rejection into acts of love. After 10 years of estrangement, a spontaneous call to a father led to meeting as adults. The acceptance had finally come. He might never change. The relationship, longed for, needed to be grieved. When they met and he began criticizing someone close, the body signaled a limit, shallow breathing, hardened chest. Instead of enduring or exploding, there was a third option, leaving. Not with drama, just simple recognition. This crosses my boundary and I choose self-care. Think of boundaries like skin, protective yet porous. They're invitations to know each other authentically. Being authentic means being a real one, honest, true to feelings, consistent despite external pressures. People-pleasing develops from childhood when we learned to prioritize others' needs over our own. True authenticity isn't found in rigid reactions, but in mutuality, maintaining awareness of ourselves while perceiving others. When we live with our history honestly, we can experience the wonder of true intimacy. At 36, chest pains during conflict facilitation signaled a heart incident. Working at Black Lives Matter Global Network, absorbing everyone's pain while believing compassion alone could hold things together had pushed the body past its limits. After weeks of recovery, the decision came to leave. Fighting to keep everyone together had drowned out the body's warnings and missed what conflict itself was teaching. The law of entropy tells us everything eventually falls apart. Rather than fighting discord to maintain control, we need to let it destabilize and teach us. Analyzing breakdowns revealed a pattern. Beneath accusations and defenses lies a vulnerable truth people protect at all costs. For conflict to be productive, we must create safety for this dangerous truth to emerge. Organizational leaders Vicky and Bia demonstrated this transformation. Their mutual blame dissolved when Vicky admitted seeing Bia as a mentor and feeling ashamed to ask for help, while Bia recognized being hard on Vicky because she saw herself in her. Vulnerability allowed structured mentorship to replace conflict. At every conflict center is a gem retrieved only through vulnerability, by saying what makes us feel small and afraid. What changes us isn't determining who's right, but making amends and acknowledging harm. Accountability means seeing ourselves as both harmed and harming, believing in our capacity to change. Our political polarization stems from deep-seated fear. We sense walls being erected, first built inside people before manifesting in the world. A society gripped by terror clings to power for protection, breaking rules for self-preservation and struggling to recognize that change might bring relief. Maya Angelou recognized courage as the most important of all virtues because without it, we can't consistently practice any other virtue. The word courage comes from cor, Latin for heart, meaning to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. Embodied courage invites fear rather than wrestling it away. Fear signals that something we care about is threatened. In courage, we resist fear's contractions, staying open while letting fear move through us. Sometimes, courage means simply being yourself. Kiana, a Chamorro trans woman who survived a brutal hate crime, continued performing drag despite the violence. "I'm not depriving the people of this beauty," she'd say. Courage is contagious and more powerful when shared. Black freedom movements exemplify this collective courage, not solitary suppression of fear, but connective courage that inspired countless unnamed people. Fannie Lou Hamer embodied this after being brutally tortured for attempting to register to vote in 1963. Despite the danger, she continued her work, saying, "If I fall, I'll fall 5 feet 4 inches forward in the fight for freedom." Love remains central to transformation, though often dismissed in serious discussions of change. James Baldwin wrote that love takes off the masks that we fear we cannot live without and know we cannot live within. While courage directs our actions, love gives them meaning. Yet discussing love earnestly reveals vulnerability many avoid, especially where historical trauma makes love feel dangerous. Love transcends feeling. It's willing another's existence with steady presence. Our culture substitutes domination for love, seeking power over others. Transgressive forms of love, like queer love, undermine domination-based societies by demonstrating love beyond social advantage. Learning to love begins with oneself, taking self-dates, interrupting critical inner voices with affirmations, even singing love songs to oneself. As bell hooks taught, there can be no love without justice. Many fighting for justice are ultimately fighting for love. Malcolm X said, "Light creates understanding. Understanding creates love. Love creates patience, and patience creates unity." The love needed for healing is active, found in listening, speaking hard truths, and showing up when risky. Healing isn't a destination, it's a practice. Your tears aren't weakness, they're wisdom breaking through. Your boundaries aren't barriers, they're bridges to authentic love. We can't heal alone what was broken collectively. The revolution we need lives in choosing vulnerability over performance, in the courage to love when domination seems safer.